Hurry into Menards right now and save big money. Miracle-Gro raised bed soil helps you grow bigger, more bountiful plants. It provides the right foundation your plants need to thrive with a 100% organic formula that requires no mixing. Add Miracle-Gro raised bed soil to help your plants grow with organic nutrients you can count on. Visit our garden center or check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. If you've ever seen someone endure a seizure before or been the unfortunate sufferer of one, I don't need to tell you how horrific it is to be a part of. If you haven't, count yourself lucky. There are few things in this world more mentally scarring than seeing another human being convulsing on the floor as their eyes roll back into their heads, their jaws clenched, and their joints rigid as they shake or, if you're very unfortunate, writhing around and even dislocating joints as they search for new ways to bend and snap. Imagine that feeling of helplessness in front of a stranger, and then compounds the grief by tenfold when it's your entire world and you've just gotten home from work to find them writhing on the ground for the 7th time this year. Your first thought isn't an ambulance, medication, or anything like that. No, it's to check that she hasn't smashed her skull on the coffee table, that she's not choking on her own vomit, and then to make an educated guess at how long she's been seizing for. No epileptic wants an ambulance called every time this occurs, so you have the unenviable task of timing their suffering before calling one, usually about 3 to 5 minutes. This is my reality, and one that I will willingly bear if it means that I can save her as much as she's saved me over the years. Lucille is a bright, vibrant, and unbelievably creative soul. She's capable of painting the most incredible pieces of landscape portraiture while telling a crass story that'd make even a dominatrix blush. A voice that bounced in your skull long after it had finished its journey into your ears, and she has a zest for life that had me head over heels from the moment we met. What she first saw in a geeky kid who loved family and nights staying in more than extravagant parties is beyond me, but I never stopped being my truest self from the first conversation. And I guess it just stuck. Which is why now is so damn hard for me to deal with. Why I'm trying so hard to talk about this. I'm telling you all this beforehand because I want you to understand that Lucille was special. To me, she was my everything, and someone I would move heaven and earth for. People say that all the time, but so few mean it. I would do things that I'd let haunt me with a smile for the rest of my life if it meant hearing her say she loved me one last time. Understands that I am just a man doing right by his wife, or at least trying to. Coming here helps. Maybe it's part therapeutic and part guilty conscience. I hope by the end of this you'll understand where I'm coming from. Lucille was first diagnosed with a tumor in the fall of 2017. We'd been married for 3 years, and she'd been steadily suffering absences in her memory for around 6 months leading up to the first seizure. To begin with, it was the usual tip-of-my-tongue moments we all get. Then it progressed to forgetting her keys and being locked out for an hour after finishing work. It grew into more concerning things, like nearly setting fire to our kitchen as she would go and take a bath with the stove on. The final straw came when she neglected to stop at a red light. She was unable to hit the brakes in time and careened into an electrical pole. When the police found her, she was gripping the steering wheel so tight with her jaw clenched so hard that they worried she was suffering a psychotic episode. The adjustments to her condition was rough. Doctors rarely have great bedside manner at the best of times, and when our physician advised us of our options to either go on a $145,000 treatment plan that only had a 25% success, or we need to look into hospice care immediately, we were heartbroken. Suffice to say, my wife stormed out and resolved to use her artwork to ensure she never forgot again. Her determination was anything but dampened. It was emboldened. Like any good husband, I support her and ensured that, at the very least, she got her medication while she tried her own art therapy. She would start painting small, innocuous icons on sticky notes around the house. Things like a yellow sticky note next to the front door with a slew of creative iconography reminding her to get her keys, and a doodle of her standing under a stormy cloud outside if she forgot, or a picture of a pill bottle with overly happy faces on a blue note by her bedside cabinet and in the bedroom to ensure she got her daily dosage of anticonvulsants. For a time, these actually helped, and I would get used to finding small notes around the house, even for me, little reminders of her love in the form of short messages like, "I love how much you laughed with me today," or "I appreciate you giving me a neck massage after the last seizure." And it never stopped being a welcome sight. Those first couple of months convinced me that she was going to beat this. She would overcome it and sell her story to Time magazine and become a therapist of the century for her groundbreaking discoveries on memory retention. I'm sure you all know, however, that we rarely ever get what we want. It was the late summer, and I had been working away a lot more than I wanted. As an architect, I took whatever contracts I needed. Medical bills are seldom ever totally affordable in the country, even with insurance, and our deductible was still high, so the contract I ended up taking was nearby if anything went wrong, but far longer hours than I was used to. I'd been working a particularly lengthy afternoon when I came back to the sounds of grunting and snapping, finding Lucille's fragile form on the ground and next to the coffee table, where her head had made contact with the corner before landing on the ground and nestled in a pool of her blood. I rolled her over and soothed her as I'd done so many times before, calling 911 the moment I spied blood. Thankfully, they were over within minutes and took her into the ambulance, but unlike so many other times, she was not coming out of this one. As the title suggests, she continued to seize as they strapped her down, her joints flailing and smashing against the EMTs, the medical walls of the ambulance, and anything they could find until she was mercifully sedated. "You should get her things. It's not likely she'll be coming home tonight," one of the EMTs called back to me, sweat dripping off their brow after finally putting her down. I knew the drill by this point, but it was still painful to hear. I nodded and told them I would follow on as soon as I'd had gathered everything. Heading back into the house, I hadn't noticed some of the extra sticky notes dotted around the living room, leading to the edge of our stairs. They weren't placed on the walls, but instead hung by a thin black thread that Lucille must have pinned from end to end in strategic places on the house. Wondering if she'd documented how she felt and if it was potentially relevant for her physician, I grabbed the nearest one and read it. "Don't forget, you'll be making contact at 4:42 p.m. sharp. Wear loose clothing and do not take your meds." A small stop sign with a blind eye in the center peeking back at me. Why the hell would she tell herself not to take her medication? Confused, I went to the next one a few feet away and felt the hairs on my neck stand on end as I did so. He's offering me a deal. I can explore more of his world if I give up 1 month of my lifespan each time I enter it. Seems fair to me. He called it the decadent plane. Must remember that next time. Oh, and to call him the fringe god. He didn't like being called a black mass. Next to this one were two small drawings, one of Lucille's body floating around pillars of steel.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
And light, with a huge mass at the center. The other simply writing the words, "Fringe God," over and over, progressively getting more scratchy with each consecutive entry. Hands shaking, I frantically ran through the living room and up the stairs to our bedroom, grabbing as many notes as I could in the process. Some were complete gibberish, and others offered little insight. Following the trail to our bedroom, I came across her dream journal. Concern for how far her mental state had deteriorated was building within me as I scanned each entry. "Today I had a seizure. In the process, I got to dive deeper into the amorphous golden shroud and see the beauty that dwelled within. I want to remember it, but I'm too nervous to even write it down. I gotta stop taking my meds. Too much interference. Maybe I could paint some of it. Tried painting the visage of the Nocturne One. His crown too beautiful for me to even put onto canvas. I tried to speak his name aloud, and I ended up with a migraine. Picturing him in my head, it just made me cry. It hurts so much, but I cannot wait to get back there. Today was special. The Fringe God gave me a better offer than before, and I swear the Nocturne One wept from beneath his flesh mask as the offer was made. If I did exactly as he said, I would be able to explore the inner sanctums of the decadent plains and gain knowledge I could bring back with me. I have to remember these plains when I get back. I looked at the final drawing, and I felt sick. She'd drawn steps for how to cause bleeding in her brain, and a seizure so strong that it would effectively kill her if I hadn't come home when I did. More drawings were strewn across her canvas, but I had no time to peruse, as my cell phone rang, and I realized how much time I'd wasted in the apartment.
Mr. Loomis, it's Dr. Mitesh. If you aren't already on your way down, you need to get here immediately. Your wife, is she?
Arriving at the hospital and apologizing profusely for my terrible parking on the curb, I rushed in and headed straight for the neurology ward, notes tucked into my pocket as I tried my best not to bump into other visitors, my mind focused on one thing, Lucille. I turned the last corner and I heard the screaming before I saw the staff. It was filled with pain, terror, and it belonged to my wife. Spotting a nurse leaning against the window, I approached him and tried my best to keep my composure as my world crumbled around me.
My wife, Miss Loomis, is she?
I breathed, my eyes darting to the foreboding double doors and back to the obviously shaken up nurse. He tried to be professional, but whatever was going on was far beyond his experience level.
She's not stopped seizing since we got here. We've tried sedating her several times, but it's not doing her any good. I'm sorry. The screaming got too much, and I had to take a breather. The doctor should be out for you soon. Excuse me.
Waiting around for a half hour and staring at the notes did nothing to calm my nerves, nor did Dr. Mitesh when he finally came out and ushered me to a waiting room. He explains to me that she wasn't just having one continuous seizure, or at least he didn't think so, but was instead having consecutive seizures, one after the other, without any rest. I've honestly not seen anything like it. He began, hands rubbing each other as he spoke. I've tried to get a scan of her brain, but, well, not safe, right? I chimed in, fully aware that any person mid-seizure is a liability. My wife may be small, but she packed a punch at the best of times.
Right. We've upped the dosage to bring her to a calm state, but it seems to wear off quickly. I've requested our head of neurology, and hopefully she can shed some more light on this. In the meantime, you're welcome to sit with her, but I must apologize in advance for the straps.
He saw my eyebrows raise and clarified.
This is a precaution, I assure you. We've just managed to fully put her under, but we don't wish to take any chances or have her cause more harm to herself.
He leaned forward.
We will get to the bottom of this. I promise you.
He led me back into her room, and for the first time in what felt like weeks, I looked upon my poor, broken wife. Her face was bruised up from the knock she'd taken as she fell, head bandaged up with gauze, and her face scrunched up in a permanent grin. It never ceased to horrify or hurt me to see her body after it'd been through an ordeal such as this. Tears ran down my face as I sat next to her and resisted the urge to hold her hand. Instead, just electing to sit and try to talk to her.
Hey, Lulu. It's Arthur.
Come back once again to help pick up your goofy ass. I giggled, sniffing hard at our own lame attempts to codify her debilitating illness.
You know, you really scared me today. I thought I was gonna lose you.
I pulled out some of the notes in my pocket and figured it would make good conversation while I waited for the neurologist.
I found these notes while I was getting your things. I wish I'd known just how bad things had gotten, but I was so busy working, I didn't see the signs. I'm so sorry, Lucille. I felt a lump in my throat as I fought back tears.
Never be sorry when a deal can be made of a vessel. There's always a chance for her to be redeemed.
The voice echoed around the room, bouncing off of the walls and rattling in my bones. It was ancient, foreboding, and commanding. Words fail to truly encapsulate what happens next. But I'll make a meager attempt. Slinking around on all fours from beneath her bed at first, a hulking dark mass of shifting substances. Jagged thick limbs ending in hooves carefully planted, and the mass tensing as it began to rise from the other side of the bed. A humanoid torso rose, and had anyone else seen what I'd seen, madness and death would have permeated that hospital. It defied logic and reason, but I couldn't look away. A hairy male torso with a spine protruding towards me and two amorphous arms jutting out of their sockets and pressing on the back as the head snapped forward to look at me. The skull was of a creature resembling a deer with flecks of black flesh hanging off the bone, white orbs beaming in the sockets, and antlers made from arms of a human protruding from either edge of it, muscle and sinew showing through as if it was in the process of shedding. I wanted to retch, to scream, to throw my body over Lucille's, but I was transfixed.
Your bondmaid made a choice with the grains of sand she had left in her hourglass. She elected to boost her limited understanding.
The voice was smooth and almost disarming in nature. I was terrified to my core, but enraptured by every syllable.
You may yet still save her, vessel. But is that what she wants?
It cocked its head to the side and stared at us both, the question ringing out in my head for a few moments as flashes of Lucille and I in better days went through my mind. Her knack for exploration, love of art, and her laughter all jostled for position in my head before I snapped back.
Why wouldn't she want to be here with me? What kind of question is that?
Terror gripped me, but grief is a powerful motivator.
Can you save her or not? What do I need to do?
It dug its claws into one of the antlers as if biding its time, almost tormenting me, before applying methodically.
I can, but suffering awaits.
The response rang out, and it gave no further elaboration, save for pointing at her head and saying,
"She must wear the crown."
And then pointing to me, adding,
"You must bear the guilt."
A small, lamprey-like creature appeared from the neck of this fringe god, as my wife described him, and he pulled it off. Uncountable eyes and sharp teeth bore down upon me, an ear-piercing shriek ripping through my eardrums.
She will be saved, if that is your wish, but your guilt will be eternal, vessel.
He reiterated, holding out this parasite that was pulling at his emaciated digits to get to me.
Do you accept the gift? Do you pledge yourself to the fringe?
I swallowed and nodded, reaching out to take whatever the hell was in his hand. But the antlers moved from their static spot on his skull and grabbed me, pulling me over the bed and deep into this monstrosity's eyes.
Show me solidarity first, vessel. Earn your seat at the table.
And in that moment, it was as if he was never there. Like I'd snapped awake from a nightmare, only to find myself still beside her bed in the hospital room. Groggy, I looked around and cast my eyes towards my wife. Eyes wide open, she was staring right at me. Horror plastered across her face as she began to open her mouth wider and wider, unblinking as she did so. Her eyes rolled into the back of her head as a cacophony of screams erupted from her and her body began to jerk violently. It was on a different scale than any seizure I ever witnessed from her previously, and before I even had a chance to react, nurses and doctors swarmed around her, ushering me out the door as they took over. She carried on seizing for the next 90 hours. There was nothing they could do for her. The seizing persisted, Her body was riddled with bruises, and her vocal cords by this point were long since ruptured. A whispering yelp, all she was able to muster. Her body began to fail her on the fifth day, and while she was contorting into horrific positions for her body to attempt to support, her strength was fading rapidly, and the doctors were able to restrain her with greater ease. The neurologists were stumped. Experts across the U.S. had no concrete idea, and the sole consensus they could come to was that the tumor was now pressing more into her brain, and the seizures would not cease without risky surgery. They gave me time to think it over, of course, letting me sit with her again now that she was in a more sedated state, though I was terrified to do so. Before going in to be by her side, I resolved to try and sleep in the adjacent waiting room. Having not received any proper news or resolution since this began, I now felt a degree of weight had been lifted, and that if I was going to see my wife for potentially the last time, it would do me good to do so with a clear mind. I don't know if you'd call it a dream or a nightmare, but what I saw in that space was more vivid and tangible than anything that had come before it. I was your typical dreamer and barely remembered my experiences unless they were emotionally driven or traumatic, but this was on a whole new level, and I can still remember the way it looked, smelled, and even felt on my skin as I floated. I dare not go into detail here. I fear that may break the pact I now have with the Fringe God, but I will say that my wife was right in her notes. She did not do it any justice. I only had glimpses of the gates she stood in front of. Both were shut to me, and lumbering Goliaths stood on either side, bearing down on me as I floated aimlessly, unsure of how to proceed. Once again, the Fringe God appeared in front of me, leaning forward as he spoke.
Your pact is about to be complete, vessel. Are you prepared for the hardships ahead? Are you ready to worship?
As he finished, the gate opened up just enough for me to see my wife behind it. Her smile broke through the fog in my mind and put me at ease in a way I never thought I'd experience again. Without thinking, I nodded.
Whatever it takes to free her, I'm ready.
I replied, resolute.
Then the pact is sealed. I will allow you to say goodbye before the traversals begin on the next lunar cycle.
He extended an antler, and I begrudgingly gripped it.
Why would I need to say goodbye here?
I asked. The Fringe God shook his head.
Not here. Your guilt begins now.
I lied to her. I lied to myself. I lied to you.
I'm sat in the waiting room, and I can feel the sheer weight of my sins bearing down on me like a lead weight on my shoulder, or a leech attached to my neck, growing fat and engorged on every black mark from my life. The hardest part of watching someone you love die slowly is never knowing when to let go. Living in a perpetual state of agony and wondering if this is your last day eating breakfast, your last ever I love you, or your last ever kiss. Everything mundane becomes ecstasy, and you savor those quiet moments when you're not stressing over medication, palliative care, or what your life will be like in the lack long after. Lucille loved her art. She loved creating fantastical monsters she could immerse herself in, and I adored creating and building those worlds as an architect and designer. We bonded over that love of the weird and unusual so many years ago, and it was what kept us strong throughout those dark days. Even now, its influence can be felt through every word you see upon this recount of events. I didn't just time her seizure because I knew it would be a mild one. I did it because I was determined to make sure if she died, it was in her home and in my arms. With dignity, I must deal with that blame for the rest of my life. And every time I look in the mirror, I see the Fringe God staring over my shoulder and reminding me what I did. Reminding me of my sins. Lucille is on life support in the next room. And as soon as I finish this documentation, this confession, I will do the merciful thing and let her go. I will hold her hand, kiss her forehead, and hold those post-it notes tightly as she slips away and falls into the realm she was so desperate to stay in. It is the right thing, no matter the cost of my sins. Maybe I'm at peace with it, because I know that this was an inevitability. That blaming myself is exactly what any widower of a terminally ill loved one would do. That my timing was, at its core, just standard practice, regardless of my selfishness. Maybe it's because I know she was a passionate believer in dying with dignity, and she fought tooth and nail to stay alive as long as she could. Or maybe it's because when I slept last night after I'd said my goodbyes, I saw her in that indescribable realm, smiling at a distance with the Nocturnal One's arm protectively draped over her shoulder. The obelisk of Sonder was my sole means of emotional communication between us as I sat in the Stygian void between the dream world and the realm she now inhabits. Maybe I know that the good days when I catch her smile shining off the horizon are worth every enduring night terror that springs forth unspeakable creatures that threaten to tear me from my fringe god, to tempt me to their realms with promises of forbidden desires as they torture every corner of my mind. All I know is that I will go to sleep tonight, and I will once again see her. Whether it's real or not doesn't matter. My fringe god fulfilled his end of the pact. Now it is my turn to do the same.